Blog Talk Radio.
I think we need some Christmas music. I also think we need to be off mute for this to work. Hello, 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 and welcome to Drive Through HR. I hope you can hear me. I'm using a new microphone today. I am your host, Crystal Miller. The mute button is flashing, so it's quite possible that nothing's going on. But I am with, live and in person, Trish McFarland.
Hello. Thanks for having me on the show.
Can you hear, Trish? Can someone let us know? We're going to assume that you can. All right. Well, Trish, for anybody who doesn't know you, say hi.
Hi. Well, I'm Trish McFarland, and I'm an H3 HR Advisors, which is an analyst firm. I'm based just out of St. Louis, Missouri, and before becoming an analyst, I was an HR practitioner and leader for about 17 years, so HR is my passion. Do a little bit of blogging once in a while and a little bit of podcasting once in a while, and other than that, that's kind of my HR life in a nutshell.
Well, there you go. So, I really have absolutely no idea if anybody can hear us. At all. We're using Dwayne Lane's microphone today.
We're going to look on Twitter. Maybe Matt Salick can tell us if he can hear us today.
Oh, let's ask him. On Drive Through HR. All right. Well, let's assume that we're able to be heard. We're audible. Before we throw an audible and start over. Which I don't even know that we can really do with Blog Talk. It's not really Matt.
No, I think we just keep going.
That works.
We'll see. We'll see if we're heard.
All right.
He says we're fine.
We're fine. All right, good deal.
See, now that's what it's like when my people are there for me. Right there. Matt is my number one guy. Thanks, Matt.
Are you ready for this year to end? Like, are you ready for 2016?
I'm so ready. And that's why I was like, when you said, oh, do you want to be on the show? I'm like, yes, let's talk about next year because I am sick of 2015. It's been a tough year.
It really has. I think it's been a tough year and a lot of change for a lot of people. And you've had a lot of changes. You started your own firm. You're doing a lot more traveling. What's that like?
You know, it's wonderful and awful all at the same time. I've always had jobs where I've traveled, actually quite a bit by choice when I was a practitioner and doing sort of all of the events and speaking and that sort of thing. You know, I was doing maybe 10 trips a year, and so it wasn't too bad. I think that was maybe a nice amount of travel. But then, you know, once you're an analyst and once you're going to a lot of different, both, you know, client sites as well as different vendor events and trying to stay up on things, the travel has just exponentially grown. So then going out on your own, you feel like you have to go to everything. So I think that for my first year out, it's been a great year. It's been a very busy year. And I've probably seen more places than I ever thought I would in my first year on my own. But definitely for next year, I need to scale back a little bit. I need to be a little more reasonable about my myself. And I think it's just when you travel this much, and maybe you feel this way, it's just that mentally you can do it all, but physically your body just starts wearing down. That jet lag, that the constant state of not feeling awake and healthy and right. And I don't know, at least that's how I've been feeling the last couple months, just sort of run down.
Yeah, no, it definitely takes a toll on you physically and mentally, but it also can make it, for me, what I've noticed is it can make working a little bit challenging. Now, I can work and I can meet my clients flow, both do, and we both do, right? That's
absolutely
part of the gig.
Right.
But when your office changes every day or every couple of days, like figuring out where your stuff is and getting into a groove in each new hotel, like it can be a bit of a challenge. So yeah. I know for me, I scaled, it doesn't seem like it. I'm at 94,000 miles for the year. So we had to like get those last few trips in to make executive platinum status, but that's still a scale back from the year before.
Wow.
And, what I noticed was that scaling back even just a little bit and creating some consistency in the places that I go. So, you know, I have a base of operations here in Kirkwood, and then I have a base of operations in Dallas. But so trying to create some consistency in where I'm traveling to made it a little bit easier, where the year before it was truly a challenge to be able to keep focused for more than about 60 minutes at a time.
Yeah, I agree. So. It's very hard. Well, and you don't always know, even if you're, whether it's a client or you know, just even in a hotel room, you don't know what you have access to necessarily.
Right.
Or
what's the Wi-Fi like?
Right. Or, you know, it's the other day I was trying to print something and it took me over half an hour just to get on a printer somewhere. And so I was like, really? You know, so it's just, it does probably waste some more of the time that you could be using for other things.
Yeah, we have to get to the point where paper becomes like a non-necessity. So that was,
right.
For me, that required investing in some of the Adobe products that I can, like Adobe Acrobat Pro, so yep. I can go through and sign and make edits and things within yep. the computer, which is great, but that's challenging too if that's not how you function, right? Some people need to be right. able to turn pages and make notes and stuff to be able to retain information. So it's interesting, the life of the road warrior. I don't know how Brian Abramowitz and Dwayne Lay and all those people do it. I just don't.
They need to like write a guide for the rest of us who haven't been doing it quite as long.
Right. Seltzer's guide up in the air.
Yeah, I'm getting better at packing. I kind of keep a suitcase pretty well packed. I have all separate, you know, toiletries and makeup that never come out of the bag, that sort of thing. I mean, so I've gotten used to that aspect of it. But.
Yeah, I had that, and then I left it in Spain, I think, is where I left my makeup.
Oh, no.
So now I've got to redo the travel makeup, yeah. But, you know, hey, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't wear it all that often anyway. I bring it with me everywhere, and I never put it on. So there's that. Well, what else is going on in your world? What do you want to talk about today on Drive-Thru?
Well, you know, I mean, just maybe some things I've been thinking about for next year. So I have a couple different projects I've been working on. I've been working on a lot to do around performance management and whether or not ratings should still exist. I don't know if you've had that kind of come up in your world.
You know, so one of the advantages of being the CEO of a company, and that's just such a funny little title when you've got a few people in your team, right? But when you run a company or you own a company, one of the best things about it, I think, is you can say, yeah, we're not doing things like performance reviews. No, or we're doing performance reviews, but you're always rated well. And that can be a good and a bad thing, right? It's a double-edged sword because I think probably small businesses need performance management, maybe even more so than giant established enterprise organizations that he had to move mountains to really get out of line anyway.
So, that's a good point.
So there's exponential gains and losses, but incremental gains and losses. But with small businesses, if you're not keeping track on performance really closely, it can be just detrimental to your business, even in the party of one. Right. So, and we don't have performance systems for parties of one. Like, what does that look like?
Right.
So I don't do it a lot at all, but what are you finding out about it?
Well, I've been asked to do some research for a couple different vendor clients. And so I had been working on that the last couple months. And so it's just been interesting, especially in the news with, you know, all of these companies like Deloitte, like Accenture, like, you know, GE getting rid of the rating system, supposedly, and sort of looking at it from a research aspect versus as a former practitioner, because I still have all that hesitation around, well, that's fine, but still, you know, a leader is going to have a rating in their head for someone. They're going to know. They're going to be able to rank their team, because if the day comes, you have to do reduction in force. You know, you have to know where you're going to start cutting. So I don't know. It's been interesting. I would say a lot of negativity around the force distribution. I think that's probably going away if it's not.
Which is good.
Pretty well run. It is good. And there's been a lot of interesting research by others around that as well, as how it's really not, you know, we're not really performing in a true bell curve anyway. So in order to manage your business like that, it's not smart. So I think in 16, it's going to be a lot around seeing how those companies who have eliminated sort of the traditional way to measure performance, how they're doing, what they're finding, what the challenges are. And what the HR people think, because that's also the other component. I think a lot of the vendors are switching to trying to provide more flexibility around how the performance is measured, whether that's an annual review or doing pulse reviews throughout the year or however they're handling it. But so it's exciting to see greater flexibility around, you know, sort of giving feedback. And also I think there's a lot of vendors who are coming to me saying that they know people want more feedback, and that's probably true overall, but I think there are still people who don't like it necessarily.
So real-time feedback models, I think, are fantastic, right? I mean, it's if you're looking, if performance management is truly supposed to manage and help elevate performance, and it's not just a record-keeping system that justifies bonuses, promotions, and terminations,
right,
then you know, that the real-time feedback mechanism is important to be able to make the little incremental adjustments you need to be able to make throughout the year.
Right.
The problem with it is it's also highly emotional, right? So you know, if I'm giving you feedback in real time and you've just said something that's really annoying, then chances are that's going to be filtered into my feedback, and it's human nature.
Absolutely.
So how do you handle that human element of emotion in a way that doesn't negatively impact employee performance? And I don't know that we have an answer for that. I have like iReview, and some of those technologies are trying to address that, and I think it's a good thing. But overall, that's a step outside of HR, or maybe HR facilitated training with managers, and we don't have enough managerial training. And that's probably part of the reason the feedback is so poor,
right,
whether it's annually given or daily.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think, too, people who are maybe like you and I, who've been in business for, you know, quite a while, and we were sort of raised up in the model where, you know, it was under maybe forced distribution, mm-hmm, or, you know, the feedback wasn't given maybe in the most ideal way. Well, that's how we learned how to do it, though. So it is
right.
It's tough. It's tough if you're not in a leadership role. If you're not making time to be trained or training yourself somehow, then it's really tough to get feedback.
Well, and it's a top-down endeavor, too, right? Like, if your CEO and your C leadership isn't on board with that kind of feedback and with making sure that feedback is productive rather than reportive, then you're not going to get the investment from leadership to be able to get the buy-in you need to be able to get the training that ultimately your managers need. So, you know, it's one of those things that I think a lot is tasked to HR and put on HR that we have the ability to influence but not actually control. So performance management feels very much in that vein, right?
Yeah.
So it may be something that HR manages, but the reality is it's a leadership issue.
Right, it is. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to me just to see how this works out for next year, because I think it's sort of that old topic that's all of a sudden become relevant again.
Yeah.
In a different way, because people are desiring something different. I think there's also employees like me, when I've worked for someone else, I really don't want someone giving me daily, weekly, monthly feedback. I really don't. I mean, I kind of like the annual thing. I kind of know. That's the other thing. I think as a person, and maybe some people aren't honest with themselves, I know when I've done a good job, and I know when I've done a poor job. And if I can't figure that out a little bit, you know, I'm not that person who wants the accolades all the time and the pats on the back. It's a little bit embarrassing for me. So what do you do with an employee like that who really isn't, you know, if you're switching to a whole new model of giving maybe weekly feedback or at the end of every single project or whatever, that may be great for a large number of your company, but what about the people that really don't feel comfortable with that? Are you going to then have turnover because someone like me wouldn't stay?
Right. Well, and if you're not comfortable getting that kind of feedback, you're probably going to be equally uncomfortable being forced to give that kind of feedback to younger generations that may want it. Right? Like, and think about it.
That's true.
We're not old, like,
that's
by any stretch of the imagination,
right,
but we're not the young people in the office anymore. You know, there's a whole new crop of kids that want daily, if not hourly, kudos for this one cool thing they did.
Right.
And that's, you know, it's interesting to me when you listen to managers. So like when I'm going in and talking about talent acquisition and retention strategies with organizations, I do hear a lot of managers talk about we need less needy employees.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, well, let's talk about that. What does that mean? And so they want people that they can just say, this is your project, now go do it. And we're going to talk about the business impact when it goes offline. Like,
right,
if you go offline, we'll talk about the business. But I don't want to hear you need a pat on the head because you figured out how to file this report. Like,
right,
that's not going to happen.
Right.
But that's what they need. So there's this balance, right? So if you switch to that thing and you're not comfortable getting it, you're not comfortable giving it, do you stay? So what sort of gap is that going to create in your management levels as well?
That's a good point. The way I've handled it, at least in the past or the recent past, has been I've made sure, at least at my last couple jobs, I made sure that I had someone who was high level working with me who was the exact opposite of me. So they were the more nurturing, hand-holding, pat on the head kind of leader. And I didn't have to be. So I sort of know what my weakness is, because for me, that's a strength, but I can see that it would be perceived maybe by a more needy employee as a weakness. But yeah, I think just you have to surround yourself. You have to recognize in yourself what your style is and what you're comfortable with, and then make sure you get somebody else, at least one person or more, depending on how big your team is, who can take care of that part for you. You know, and I think too, you have to try. I've always tried to be very complimentary, I think, but yeah, I have definitely had times where people fresh out of college wanting lots of handholding, I was not going to be the person to get that.
I'm giggling because I'm such the same way.
Yeah. Even when I was young, it was funny when I worked in public accounting, and I think I was manager level at that point. Well, it was totally young, but late 20s, and the person who worked with me, she was very nurturing. I was not. And I would tell people, like, everybody knew, if you needed to come cry to HR and have that discussion, you need to go next door. Don't come to Trisha's office, because there were no tears in Trisha's office. Like, that was sort of the thing. So I don't know. I think as long as people know what your style is and you try and adapt to them a little bit.
And I think that's the wisdom that comes with experience, right? Is the adaptation bit, right? Because I remember early 20s, my first managerial role, I wasn't even 20. And so it was my first big job, and I was very excited. I had a team of four. That was cool. Mm-hmm. No clue what to do with them. They were all a decade older than me.
Wow.
I had no business in that job, but I got it. And so it was one of those things where it's like, I'm trying to give these people experience on how to grow their career, and I didn't know how to do it, so it became very matter of fact. Everything became very matter of fact. So this was your assignment. You did it. Good. You didn't do it. Bad. It's horrible. Very bad manager early on. And then it did improve really until I got into my 30s, because I remember in my first major HR role, I had a team of 33.
And that's pretty team.
Yeah, it was a big team. It was cool. I really enjoyed it. It was another one of those experiences was like I was in no way qualified for, but because I was a recruiter that walked into an organization that had no HR and went, you need all of this stuff. And it's like, well, that's not your job. Go figure it out. And so, built a payroll team, built all these things, did all this stuff. And it was neat. But again, it was such high pressure. And the learning curve in that role was so great that I didn't have time for other people's learning curves in the beginning. So I think my nickname in that job was actually Dragon Lady.
Oh, wow. That's a good one. I was called the Terminator. I think we're like kindred spirits.
So then, I was determined the next time that I was a manager to go the opposite direction, right?
Yeah.
Like, okay, I'm not going to be the dragon lady. I'm going to be nice.
Do you think that's a good way to learn, though? I mean, that is that on-the-job training. I mean, sometimes you have to fail at managing in order to get better at managing.
Oh, yeah. I sort of think you have to fail in anything you're doing to get better, right? Because if you're doing well, you have no real impetus to do more unless you're just internally driven to be that way, which not very many people are. So again, the next role, man, oh my God, the fuzzy. It was everywhere.
You were so good.
Oh,
so nice.
I was so, how are you doing? You need to come talk? Okay, come talk to me. And I was dying inside because I hated all of it.
Have you found that happy medium now that you're...
I think I have.
A few more years of experience.
I think I have. So for me, it's we have weekly calls. So here's what we're going on. If you need anything in between, then that's great. But it's going to be, what do you need, right? Not complain about your coworkers, not complain about the deadline, whatever. It's, do you need to understand something? Do you have a question? Do you want to make sure you're on the right track? And
you're
then all the fuzzy stuff.
Though.
Yeah, but all the fuzzy stuff happens at the weekly meetings. So the weekly meetings, I will praise you for all the good things you do.
Okay.
And
so you divide
it up. Yeah. You kind of. Otherwise, it just sucks your day down. So I, on direct through HR, I probably made sure that I will never manage a big team again.
That's funny.
But I
threaten to write up Steve Bowes all the time on the happy hour. So
nice.
I'll be like, do you want a corrective action or do you not want a corrective action? This is where we're going.
That sounds fun and awfully dirty.
I wasn't thinking of it though. Yeah, picturing my little pink pad of notes that I could write someone up with. But,
there you go.
Yeah.
Attention.
Exactly.
No, so I think that's the best kind of performance, all of this stuff to say. I think that's the best kind of performance management system, right? And it's not technology oriented, it's very experiential. But technology can enable us to record those things so we can look back on it in ways that we probably wouldn't. Which means to me, when I look at performance management systems, one of the major fails is lack of employee access, right? So if I really want a performance management system to be all that it can be, I want the employee to be very deeply embedded into the system to where they're wanting to go back and look at their projects and look at things and not just have it be manager notes on, yes, you met this goal or no, you didn't.
Yeah.
And Textron does a really good job of that with their performance management system. It's not just SMART goals that are run down the organization. Like
right.
Their projects are built into that. And so it's easy for them to go in and see, oh, okay, so here's what I've done this year. Oh, that's how my manager saw this. Oh, that's what the client thought of this. Okay, this is the impact it's had on the organization. So when you get into that holistic viewpoint, I mean, especially, I hate the word holistic. It's applicable here, right? That becomes a useful performance management system
right.
versus, yes, I met my goals this year, or no, I didn't, 12 months after they were made.
Yeah.
So.
No, I agree. I think you have to have that flexibility built in and where you have that visibility to the goal too, not just for yourself, but of your leader, of the CEO, of your colleagues. And I think that colleague feedback too is becoming more important. And so having a system that also is going to allow you to have peer feedback. To me, I would much rather know or take to heart maybe something that a colleague or someone at my own level, not even necessarily at my own level, maybe someone who's, you know, just one or two levels beneath me, but, you know, sort of on the team with me. What are they thinking? What are they seeing? And some of the biggest learning can come from someone who's, you know, 5-10 years less experienced than you because they're seeing it in a whole different light. So that, to your point of being a holistic approach, I think is very valuable.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what, there was a technology that was introduced at HR Tech in 2013, and then the name is escaping me, and it's killing me inside right now.
A new one?
It was a new technology. Yeah, it was new.
I know PeopleFluent has recently built that sort of functionality into theirs.
No, it wasn't PeopleFluent. This is a smaller organization.
Infor
but they built,
is building it into theirs right now.
Which one?
Infor. They've done a lot with their technology to build in that visibility and the feedback. And like I said, PeopleFluent has done a ton with that.
I think the technology failed, which is why I'm not remembering it. Like, I don't think the company stayed.
Gotcha.
But what was interesting to me, and if I think of it, I'll put it on DirectView HR's Twitter stream later, but what was interesting to me about it was like their primary focus was that peer feedback, and not just from your group, but from other groups that you have tangential interaction with. So, you know, if your project and at some point has a marketing aspect to it, so if you're in product development and at some point marketing is going to be dealing with a product that
could
you
be better work?
Maybe.
Because theirs does that. So that could be one of them. And they've been doing a lot more. So it's sort of like not focusing on the annual review, but on that project,
right?
The high visibility and high degree of accountability, because everyone can then see what everyone else is supposed to be doing. You see the progress.
It is better work.
It's probably better work then. Yeah, they've done a nice job. It looks really good too.
Yeah. So what was interesting is, so sorry for saying that your product failed, but it was people, and I'm happy to talk to you about your product.
Yeah, Trish did not say that, by the way.
I'm still 100% sure it was that one, but the pitch they gave that was so fascinating to me was like, you know, we're not as worried about making sure that the individual understands the impact of their work, although that's definitely a product focus.
Yeah.
What's really more interesting is for other people to understand the importance of that role. So it's like, well, that's really cool. That's a really interesting concept.
Yeah.
Again, from a performance management perspective, while it may not make the difference for that one employee, if I understand how my role impacts all of the other roles outside of my job description, that's huge.
That
for organization.
Is huge. And that is what research is showing. So in the most recent research I did around this, that was one of the things that came up, is people don't feel they have enough view into how their role impacts the bottom line, or even how it impacts the projects that they're on. And that's when people leave. If you don't feel valuable, and you'll leave, and maybe you really are valuable, but you just don't see it, or no one is telling you, and then you're leaving, and really you shouldn't have left. I mean, that happens all the time. So
yeah, absolutely.
Being able to have that would solve some of that anyway, some of that type retention.
Well, it's kind of, so what, I mean, to me, that leads into, you know, one of the projects that I'm working on, but I think the industry as a whole is working on, is how do you show impact? What does impact relate? What does that mean, right? So, and how do you quantify that? So that's dollars and cents. So if I'm a receptionist, I still have a quantifiable impact on the organization. I may not, it may be hard to articulate.
Right, yeah, you're right.
But it's there, because if I'm awful, and I look back to anecdotal evidence of David Weekly, a home builder down in Texas. And they're a really good home builder. Actually, I think they're multi-state, but at the time, I think they were just in Texas. And so they're a really, really good home builder, but they had the worst receptionist at their corporate office, to the point where, you know, I was a vendor of theirs and my organization was a vendor of theirs, and we didn't want to work with them anymore, like, because dealing with her was so painful. Well, the cost of losing that project, I mean, for them, was – you know, hundreds of thousands. For us, it was hundreds of thousands. Like,
wow.
But that one person who probably makes, you know, maybe $10 an hour at that point in time. I have no idea what,
right,
what they
exactly
make. But, right. So it's I think it's a little bit of you're missing the mark if you think that an employee's worth is based off of their direct sales revenue or the level in your organization. If you're doing it right, every employee from the receptionist to your CEO has quantifiable impact.
Right.
So the question is, how do you quantify it? How do you show that impact?
Well, that takes a lot of time and a lot of thought. And I think that organizations just move so fast that that's not really the priority. And so they probably, if you ask many people if the receptionist really has an impact on the bottom line, they would say no.
Right.
Or they'd have no idea how to even begin to think about, like an example like you gave. They wouldn't even think of that as something that would be
right,
a quantifiable impact for a receptionist.
Now move that up to a project manager, though. Now you
right,
know they have impact, but what impact do they have and how much impact and where
right,
do they impact, right? And so, again, I think we look at technologies like BetterWorks and others. And, again, I'll throw an iReview again because I think that has the capability of doing that kind of a thing. Then you look at changing the game a little bit, right? They do have impact, and they do have to be. At some point, you have to sit down and say, okay, what is the worth of this if you really, truly want to understand impact?
Right.
But that's a multi-year project. You're not doing that in an organization
right,
in one calendar year.
Okay.
So the resources behind that can almost make it, I think, maybe prohibitive for some companies.
Right.
But should it be? Like, should that potentially be a bigger priority than culture marketing your organization or upgrading your ATS system,
boy,
right?
I mean, that's hard to tell. That's where they struggle. If you have limited time and limited resources, what do you do first? I mean, and if these things are multi-year, you know, projects, it becomes very hard, especially for mid-sized companies, I think, because
mm-hmm,
they're big enough that they're, you know, they're probably having a C-suite who really wants higher growth and, you know, a lot of faster pace. And, yeah, you're still dealing with, you know, some smaller HR teams, smaller talent acquisition teams, and it's a struggle to know what in the world to focus on, really.
Yeah.
You know?
So, you know, there's an organizational consultant by the name of Emma Shin, and she did a lot of work in the construction area, which is a lot of my background's construction,
mm-hmm,
so a lot of the organizational MVP who I know were in that field. And one of the things she looked at was, like, are you in growth or hypergrowth phase, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you pass into that hypergrowth phase, so you're growing at a rate of sometimes 1,000 to 1,800% per year,
yeah,
what feels like you don't have time for is probably the thing you need to do the most. So
okay,
for organizations that are in a hypergrowth phase, you know, the need to sit down and quantify that impact is probably more important than an organization that's on a stable growth track that's maybe growing at 20 to even 50% per year, right? Like that's still a lot of growth.
Absolutely.
But it's
right,
not that same hypergrowth that requires that mass hiring that ends up being, because that's really when you look at when that hypergrowth phase is done, there's probably a lot of bulk that you didn't need in your organization, right?
Oh, sure.
Because you run too lean for a while, you lose some people, and then
right,
you course correct and overhire.
Absolutely, right. Right.
So,
and
you know,
hoping that will course correct over time, which it never does, then all the wrong people stay.
Right. So not only do you not then, so there's that need for that kind of concept at that point, but probably also a really good point in time to institute, if you don't already have it, that performance management system that you're talking about. So
absolutely,
for hyper-growth companies or companies that don't have a performance management system in place, what would you suggest?
Oh, you know what? I would just say really try and find something that you can make your processes, because then you have to look at that first, see if the processes that you're using make sense, and then try and find a vendor who has the flexibility to not just come in and do the way you're doing. I think that's the mistake a lot of HR leaders or talent leaders make right from the start, is they want, or not even just them, the C-suite as well, but they want something to come in and do things the way we do it. It's being open. A lot of these vendors are spending, you know, millions of dollars on research into what are the best ways to do things. And so when you take a look, even at three or four of them, and start comparing and seeing which ones are more employee-centric maybe and which ones are more HR-centric, and you have to figure out which one works for your type of company, and then going in and being willing to make some tweaks to your process, so that you can actually be more efficient, maybe with the limited number of resources you have in your HR team, for example, or your recruiting team. And so that's where I would start. I would really take a look at the processes that I have and then try and find a vendor that not only can do that, but can help me maybe elevate that to the next level. Because they really can. They're so smart. They have so many people. And this is across the board, lots of the HR vendors. you know, I've really done a lot in these last couple of years. So
the research that you're doing on this, can you tell us where it's going to be or when it's going to be out?
Should be out in January. So I just finished a survey a couple weeks ago, and I've been traveling so much I haven't had a chance to actually write it all up. But, mm-hmm. But yeah, the findings are pretty interesting. And yeah, so probably in the next 30 days or so.
Oh, that's exciting. Yeah. Oh, make sure you let us know when we were happy to distribute it on Drive-Thru. That'll be great.
Thank you.
All right, so let's shift gears a little bit for the remaining time that we have.
Okay.
What's your HR Christmas wish?
Oh, my gosh, my HR Christmas wish? Peace and love and happiness in the HR community.
I just baby barfed. I'm not even going to lie.
No, honestly, you know what? My wish would be, we do have a great community of people who are pretty active in social and just in events and everything. And I think just my wish would be to work with some different people. I think that's been the start of what I've done this year, just working with some different people and people I haven't partnered with before, mm-hmm. whether that's a speaking engagement, because that's a little scary too. You know, I feel like, I guess I've been in a rut, a good rut, but a rut for a while. And so I'm trying to just do things differently. I want to look different. I was telling you before the show, mm-hmm. I've just signed up to do cycle surf, and I'm going to be hopefully more fit and feeling better about myself. And so, yeah, just hopefully getting to work with some different people, and not necessarily different vendors. I mean, like individuals,
yeah.
Work that I make up. I mean, projects that I make up. Sort of like when.
Well, we should sit down. You know, we should sit down with my research list and sit down with your research list and see if any of our research overlaps. That'd be fun. That'd be fun.
So yeah, just work with different people.
That's a great Christmas wish. Well, we're going to be exploring HR Christmas wishes of our guests over the next couple of weeks, and then probably New Year, New Year list.
Okay.
But it sounds like you have some fabulous New Year list working already. And pretty good wish. So I love it. I love so much that you were able to not only be on the show, but that we were able to wrap in person.
In person. This is fun. So you should have everyone just fly in, right?
Oh, my gosh. That'd be great. So actually, for next year, so we'll talk about... I'll share my HR Christmas wish.
Yeah, what's your wish?
So my wish is that I've got this crazy little scheme of having industry dinners at our house every month.
Very good. And I know you mentioned that to me.
Yes, I'm very, very excited about it.
I have your first guest idea. Uh-huh. I'll have to share offline with you who that is, and someone I have not met.
So stay tuned for pictures in January, evidently. But that's a wish that we were able to stick with that, get that off the ground, and start some interesting conversations. It's not a business development tool. It's not a way to be anything bigger than what we already are. It's just that opportunity to connect in a way that, you know, we don't. Social is fantastic, and it keeps us connected on a lot of levels, but it also is fairly superficial.
Right.
And so it'd be nice to have more in-person connections in 2016.
I like that idea. And you know what? That's how you really learn. Mm-hmm. Even at a dinner, you can walk away and just have learned, you know, 10 things you've never known before. So it's pretty inspiring. I always walk away from those sorts of things too, wanting to do more.
Well, that's why I like the analyst dinners, right? Like, I'll go to those. The conversations are fantastic.
Yeah.
I don't care about parties. Like,
right, I agree. I don't go to parties anymore at events. That's no longer part of my
HR tech life. Marketers, the parties are a massive waste of money.
Yeah.
It does not get you new clients. But these dinners, and I think what I'd really love to see, and I know that, you know, it's one of the things I've talked with a couple of my HR tech clients about, is I'd love to see smaller, more focused gatherings, right? And maybe mm-hmm. that gathering is by similarity to company size or industry or something like that.
Good idea.
It's a little more work for the marketing team, but it's going to have a more lasting impact, because at that point, you're the organization that's bringing together all of these different like-minded professionals so that they can grow their careers under, you know, settings. So, you know, I think Indeed did some of that with their roundtables. Mm-hmm. HireVue does that really phenomenally well. I've got to give them kudos on that. They do a good job of going from city to city and throwing these networking events.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, that's the kind of stuff that when we look at how do we give back to our customer base and our prospective customer base? That's the stuff people remember more than whether or not you had Third Eye Blind at a party. I don't even remember who did that. I remember Third Eye Blind, but I couldn't tell you what company put it on. Yeah. Probably HireVue.
I think it was.
But
I didn't go to that one. But I think, too, it's nice to have opportunity to sit down and slow down.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of what event it is, they're so busy through the day. And it's nice to have a nice dinner or just even a cocktail hour or something like that where you can just relax and get to know someone as a human. I think that's maybe my other focus for this year. It's like, I want to just know someone as a human, not as an HR person, not as a marketer, not as a technology company, Like, as a person, I want to know you as a person.
Well, and when you do that, like, I think that helps us in business, too, right?
Yeah, so,
You know, again, I'm like, Michael Heller must be on the brain today, probably because his show has to be rescheduled because of technical difficulties.
He's a great guy.
He is a great guy. But, like, that was one of the things we talked about, a party that he throws at HR Tech.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the marketing brain of me was like, dude, this is a lot of money for, like, I wouldn't do this. Like, I just wouldn't do this. I was like, no, I really want to. It's a way to give back. But mainly, I really enjoy getting to know people.
Yeah.
So it's not about me talking about my product or whatever. And, you know, he's like, I really just want to get to know people. And I'm like, well, that's actually the coolest thing I've heard.
Right.
And, you know, what's interesting is that people love his gathering. And I think he's done it for 2 years now.
2 years.
And, you know, from what I understand, he plans on doing it again. And it's a really neat concept. But he's not the only one that does it. There's an HR Tech, HR Tech Fest, or there's an HR Tech organization, a conference organization.
Oh, that sounds right.
That's going to be coming to
it's
the
coming,
U.S.
Yeah.
And so they did this
class.
Series of roundtables that got some really good feedback,
mm-hmm.
right? But again, it wasn't a in-your-face, let's overwhelm you with our agenda and our product and whatever.
Right.
It was just, let's sit down and talk about technology. And then, okay, once we got into that, let's sit down and talk about each other, right?
Right.
So getting that each other thing, you learn some of their stories. And case in point, you know, Ray and Thorne and I, we've known each other professionally for years.
Mm-hmm.
Man, there's so much we didn't know about our, you know, our own lives and our own similarities until we stopped talking marketing and started talking about ourselves. So maybe there's somebody out there who can help facilitate some of the stuff for people.
Yeah, that would be good.
Like us and others.
Great. New project. I wanted a Christmas wish of working with new people. Awesome.
So we'll be looking forward to see how you accomplish this agenda.
How
maybe
I
do
it
for a happy hour.
Now that
Trish will never come back on the show again because
right.
I signed her up for more work.
Oh.
I guess, you know, we should go have some lunch.
We should. We
think?
Have Dwayne Lay cooking and slaving in the kitchen for us, making, I think, fancy grilled cheese and tomato soup.
Fancy grilled cheese and tomato soup, I believe,
is
what's on the menu. Gluten free, even. So,
awesome.
Hey.
I cannot wait. It's hard to pass up coming on a show when you get fed at them. That's a brilliant thing.
There is that. There is definitely that. Well, folks out there in Radioland, we are so glad that you joined us today. We look forward to talking to you again tomorrow. I actually don't know who our guest is tomorrow, but Michael's hosting, so I'm sure it will be fantastic.
Okay.
And thank you, Trish, for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
All right, let's go eat.
Okay.